Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh, yes. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Welcome to The Healthy Mind podcast for June 6th, 2012. I hope you're doing well. I have a great program for you this week. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed last week's encore presentation of the interview that I did with Dr. John Cannell of the Vitamin D Council. I can't emphasize how important it is that everyone learn about vitamin D, what the vitamin really does, and the fact that it's more really like a steroid hormone than a vitamin. But anyway, thank you for listening to that show. I am back and ready to go. We had the birth of my third child, my daughter, Catherine, this past week, but I am so pumped to be back doing the podcast. I have a great show planned for you today. I've got some really interesting health news. It's about Sigmund Freud. And how about this? Freud, it turns out, from this latest study, was proved right. You are going to want to stick around for this a little bit later in the show. Some great health news. We'll do the headlines. And hey, we are going to have ourselves a dynamite program. All right, so I'm glad that you are here. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Please don't hesitate to email me with any questions, peter@thehealthymind.com. Okay, now, this past weekend was absolutely beautiful here in Columbus, Ohio. I hope it was a nice weekend wherever you were as well. But I finally got around to it, and I planted my garden. Not a huge garden. It's about, maybe 5 foot by 10 foot. But I've got my tomatoes. I've got my peppers. I've got my squash. I've got my snow peas. It's not a bad little garden. Now, why do I tell you about my garden? I mean, what's the point, right? Well, there's a point to this. I thought about it because over the last few days, I cannot tell you how much peace I get from just watering my garden, those 8 little plants. But I go out there, I check it out. If there's any weeds, I weed it, and then I water my garden. And I just kind of spend a little bit of time out there looking at our flowers and the like. Now, there's a purpose to this because what I want to focus on today is this idea of setting limits for ourselves. Setting limits and taking time to just be. You've heard me say this before on the program, maybe in passing, certainly when I was on the radio. We talked about this quite a bit, but the importance of just being in the moment, just being, whatever it is that you like to do. It doesn't have to be gardening. Maybe it is. But whatever it is that gives you pleasure, I can't emphasize how important it is that you regularly put that in to your daily routine. Now, why? Why is this so important? Well, think about our lives. I mean, there are a zillion things to do. We have kids, we have work responsibilities, family obligations, financial pressures, work pressures, everything. It keeps coming at us. And there's always, always, always going to be a list. I think we can all agree on that. There's always going to be a list of things that we have to do. But there is the most important part. These are things that we have to do. And they're not necessarily things that we want to do. And here's where this distinction is important. We have to ride a balance between the things that we have to do, that we're obligated to do, that we must do, and those things that we want to do. The time that we take for ourselves, no matter what it is, it may be walking, maybe jogging, it might be gardening like me, it might be reading or what have you. It is so important that you put a routine, your time, time that is sacrosanct, you're not going to compromise, that kind of time into your daily routine. It's so important. And there's a lot of cognitive theory behind this. Now, what do you mean, Dr. Z? What about this cognitive theory? As I said, there are things that we just have to do. And whether we realize it or not, the fact that we have to do these things on some level can frustrate us because they're obligations. Now, if we incorporate a little bit of time daily in something that we really love to do, beyond the fact that it's a meditative moment, that we take it for ourselves, our time, in our mind, psychologically, when we do that, it proves to us that we can take control and set a limit. That time that is ours, that we are doing what we truly want to do, which is really the time when we're the happiest and the most alive, even if it's a small amount of time, it sets a precedent every day that we are in control, that we do have the ability to change our life or change our day, to feed us emotionally and spiritually in the things that we love to do. I know it seems like a very, very small thing, but it makes a profound amount of difference in your health and your emotional well-being. And I'll give you an example of this. Just this week, I had seen someone who had come back in a follow-up session with me, and she told me something pretty remarkable. Her mood improved, and we started very low dosages of medications, actually dosages that I would have been surprised if someone responded. But she came back, and she felt so much better, as if the depression were almost completely gone. And I said, what was it? What was it that helped you so much? And her husband helped her, but she told me, you know, Dr. Z, I always felt that I had to do everything in the house, that I had to be perfect. But I was the only one who had that standard. And my husband said, take a little time for yourself, whatever it is you want to do. Now, she really liked to read, so she forced herself at first, actually forced herself to sit down for 15, 20 minutes and read. Not at bedtime, but in the middle of the evening when it was fairly hectic in the house that she could have been doing a million other things. And she relaxed. She gave herself that time. More importantly, she learned that she could give herself that time. And her mood improved. Her mood improved. And she thinks that that realization that she can take that time without the world coming apart, without feeling like we're not perfect or that she's not perfect or that she's letting her husband or her family down, just taking that time, realizing that she can and did, was so incredibly freeing for her. She loved it. This is the power when I say, make sure that you take time to just be. And I'll say that a lot in the podcast, and it may just kind of be a quick comment, but there's a lot of deep psychology behind that. So take that time, whatever it is, and incorporate that as a routine in your life. You don't need to do it much. We're incredibly powerful. But if we feed ourselves emotionally and spiritually in that way where we feel connected to ourselves and deserve it of that time which is ours to do as we please, beautiful things begin to happen. Oftentimes people will tell me, well, Dr. Z, that's being so selfish. How can I take time? I have all these other things that I have to do. It's not selfish. It's human. Let me say that again. Taking time for yourself is not selfish. It is human, and in fact, it will make you even more productive. It'll make you more productive because, again, we're always going to have to do things, have to do them, obligations. But when we take that time for ourselves, we realize that we are important, and the mandates, the things that we have to do, don't seem as bad. We actually have more energy. It happens over and over and over. So set those limits for yourself and do the things that feed you. And you will see your energy will improve. You'll feel better in general. And you will end up being even more productive, even though you took more time for yourself to just be. And that, my friends, is a wonderful step to take as we walk down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, now, the first piece of news, and this was a really interesting study. Now, we've all been around this. You go to a party or you meet somebody new, and they just make you feel good. Right? They might be the life of the party or just a really put-together person. They're happy, they're positive. And what happens? Well, for most of us, we're going to be lifted as well. We're going to start feeling good. We're going to start feeling positive. Human emotions are so highly contagious. We've all been there. That happy person who makes us feel happy. And then on the other hand, there's the other part. The person who's really down on themselves or very, very pessimistic, who can literally, if we're not careful, can drag us down too and make us feel down. But the real question here is why? Why does this happen and how? Well, the headline for this news story, Why Positive People Make Us Feel So Happy. Fascinating new study out of Finland, university researchers there. They used MRIs, the functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRIs, which actually show brain activity rather than just brain anatomy. And what they found was that literally our brain waves, our brain activity will synchronize with each other when we experience these strong emotions together, whether they're positive or negative. Our brain waves begin to mimic each other. And that's part of the reason that we begin to take on some of these emotions. If someone is a very happy person, we begin to feel happy. If they're down and negative, we can start to get it. And these researchers are really trying to literally find out biologically what is happening. Now, the researchers felt that there was a really important purpose for this, and it kind of goes back to evolution. Synchronizing our brain waves and our emotional states together are important for social interaction. It helps support a group, if you will. People are more cohesive and they get along with each other, and that is an advantage. When all individuals in a group share a common emotional state, their brains and bodies process all of that information in a similar fashion. So now we begin to see and understand why there's an emphasis, let's say in work situations or work environments, to have people feeling happy and together and cohesive. It makes everything easier. And we can see, and I see it all the time, particularly in my practice, where negative emotions, other people that might be in a work environment or in a family environment, that pull others down and make them depressed as well. And we talk about healthy ways to put yourself in positive situations, try to stay away from the negative. Now, another interesting part to the study was that especially feeling strong, unpleasant emotions versus positive emotions activated different areas of the brain. Now, specifically, the results revealed that feeling strong, unpleasant emotions, negative emotions, would synchronize individuals' brains and the emotional processing networks in the frontal area of the brain, the front of the brain, and in the midline areas of the brain. But when someone experienced a positive, a highly arousing emotion together, the brains synchronized in the areas that supported vision, attention, and a sense of touch. So even on the emotions, it's activating different parts of our brain. So this is really important as we understand the mind-body connection. Our emotions will affect the activity of all parts of our body, especially the activity of the brain. Sharing others' emotional states provides us with a framework. It provides us with a framework that helps us to understand others' intentions and their actions. It allows us to really kind of tune in to the other person to find out what it is that they really want and how we can help or protect ourselves from what may be their intentions or not. And this tuning helps in the overall group process. This was according to Professor Lori Nieminen from Aalto University in Finland. And she felt that these results have huge implications for our current models of emotions and group behavior. And it really allows us to understand how this works. And importantly, in my line of work, how emotional disorders, say like autism or schizophrenia or those types of emotional disorders, those that have abnormal social and emotional processing works and hopefully will help us in better treatments in the future. So our brains sync with each other, literally, physically, in brainwave form, when we are experiencing especially strong emotions, the mind-body connection. Okay, the next study, this was beautiful. We are sticking kind of on this mind-body theme here today on the Healthy Mind Podcast. The headline, Freud was right. A new study finds that depression is linked to feelings of guilt. This is just a wonderful story. Now, the researchers found through MRI scans that there was a strong response to guilt in people who are depressed. They found that the brains of the people with depression respond differently to feelings of guilt. And here's the important part. They continued to respond that way even after their symptoms subsided. So a shift in the way that we process it, guilt, when we're depressed and even after. Now, this research came from the University of Manchester, and it will be published in the journal Archives of General Psychiatry. But the researchers there found that the brain scans of people with a history of depression differed in those regions associated with guilt and knowledge of what might be socially acceptable behavior from individuals who never got depressed. And it really, this study provided the first evidence of these brain mechanisms, the brain biology that may help explain what Freud was talking about so many years ago, that classic observation that exaggerated guilt and self-blame are the key to understanding depression. Now, one of the scientists in the study, in fact, the lead researcher, Dr. Roland Zahn, said, quote, "Our research provides the first brain mechanism that could explain the classical observation by Freud that depression is distinguished from normal sadness by proneness to exaggerated feelings of guilt or self-blame." End of quotes. And he even went on further, Dr. Zahn did, to discuss specific areas of the brain that are affected here. They were able to find that there are specific areas of the brain that are involved with feelings of guilt. Here it's known as the subgenual region of the brain. And they also looked at the part of our brain, the temporal lobe, anterior temporal lobe, that knows about what is socially appropriate behavior. And it turns out that individuals who are more depressed and prone to guilt don't have what he called coupling of these two areas of the brain, guilt and a real good knowledge of what is socially appropriate behavior. And this makes people more prone not only to depression, but also to feeling quite guilty. Those that were never depressed were able to kind of have these parts of the brain talk to each other very well. Now, what was really interesting was that the changes that they found between depressed and non-depressed people as it related to guilt were limited to self-blame. It didn't occur when people were angry or blamed other people. So that when these individuals had so much guilt, they never could be able to tie into what might be an appropriate behavior or not, so they excessively felt guilty. There was this decoupling of those two parts of the brain. So amazing. So really, science is starting to tell us so much about the brain. I mean, we're getting to the point where we can specifically see where literal emotions are lighting up in areas of the brain, and specifically here, where guilt can come from, and the fact that guilt is a deep, deep part of depression. These researchers, maybe this isn't what they intended to do, but in moving the science forward, they might have just proven Freud's theories to be right on the mark. How about that? Okay, now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Anxiety disorders in children are not detected in due time. Now, this was a study from the University of Copenhagen, and researchers there found that only few children suffering from anxiety disorders ever undergoes treatment. They found that the number was surprisingly low, and it led them to believe that anxiety disorders in children and youth are almost disregarded. My goodness. The next headline. Patient mental health overlooked by physicians when a family member is present. A new study finds that patients with poor mental health functioning may experience more communication challenges during physicians' visits if accompanied by a loved one. Wow. And finally, beautiful. Less couch time equals fewer cookies. Simply changing one bad health habit has a domino effect on other habits, according to a new study. The most effective way to rehab a delinquent lifestyle requires two key behavioral changes. One, cutting time spent in front of the TV, and eating more fruits and vegetables. This simplified strategy is much less overwhelming for people and their doctors. Boy, I tell you, less TV time and less cookies. If we could only do that more often. I think it sounds a lot easier than it really is. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. The email address, as always, please don't hesitate to contact me, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. I always answer those emails, so don't hesitate to be in touch. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.